the benefits outweigh the risks. I'm Pam Puso, Fox News. That's what federal health officials say about the Johnson & Johnson coronavirus vaccine, which has been linked to a highly unusual type of blood clot.
FDA and CDC have concluded that the possibility of this so-called thrombosis thrombocytopenia syndrome occurring is very low.
FDA Acting Commissioner Dr. Janet Woodcock, yesterday a CDC panel voted to lift an 11-day pause on the use of the J&J vaccine. The panel also said younger women should be warned about the potential risk. The hope of finding survivors is fading in Indonesia. A military official says a sunken submarine has been located, but the vessel's oxygen supply ran out hours ago. Pressure is building on a police department in North Carolina following a deadly shooting. Seven sheriff's deputies in Pasquotank County have been placed on leave after the death of Andrew Brown Jr.
Bear with us. I hear you. I hear you. I hear your pain. I know that the community is hurting.
Sheriff Tom Wooten demands are growing for the release of body cam footage. Brown was shot multiple times Wednesday as police were serving a warrant. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin will be sentenced June 16th for the murder of George Floyd. In the meantime, federal authorities could pursue additional charges.
Department of Justice now said to be considering charges against him for a 2017 arrest involving a 14-year-old boy. According to a report, he used his knee to hold down that teenager for almost 17 minutes. The boy was injured but survived.
Fox's Kevin Cork. A SpaceX rocket carrying four astronauts has arrived at the International Space Station. America's listening to Fox News. An ambitious goal from President Biden, who hosted a virtual two-day conference on climate change with more than 40 world leaders.
This is a moment for all of us to build better economies for our children, our grandchildren, and all of us to thrive in not just now, but beyond for the next generations.
By 2030, the president would like to cut up to 52% of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. The Senate's top Republican argues the White House climate agenda would eliminate good-paying American jobs. Honda plans to phase out all gasoline-powered vehicles in North America by 2040. The Japanese automaker also predicts that by 2030, 40% of its North American vehicle sales will be battery or fuel cell-powered. A court appearance for a British socialite accused of serious sex charges.
In her first public appearance since her arrest, Ghislaine Maxwell pleaded not guilty to sex trafficking charges pertaining to grooming a 14-year-old girl starting in 2001 to have sex with Jeffrey Epstein. She's already pleaded not guilty to similar charges relating to three girls she's accused of procuring for Epstein in the mid-90s. Her attorney, David Marcus, said outside court that on Monday they plan to ask a federal appeals court to reverse the judge's ruling on Maxwell's bail.
We're very hopeful and optimistic that the Court of Appeals will allow her a chance to fight, will give her an opportunity to be on bail so that she can have a fair fight.
Maxwell also faces perjury charges. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News.
A senior House Democrat who failed to pass through a metal detector outside the House chamber is appealing a $5,000 fine. Congressman Jim Clyburn of South Carolina is the first Democrat to be fined for violating the new House rule. Three Republicans have also been fined. America's listening to Fox News.
In Virginian Falls Church on 66 westbound between the Leesburg Pike and the Beltway, that had been closed for overnight construction and detours have been posted. Now, that is in the process of clearing up, so you may find that that is reopening at this time. But just a heads up, if you're traveling in that area, you could still find a portion of the roadway closed. Now, you will find a closure in Sterling. Sterling Boulevard is closed in both directions between Shaw Road and Glen Drive, and that due to a serious accident. Police are on the scene directing traffic. Now, from GarageDoryPair.com to WML, Storm Watch 7 forecast.
A little bit on the chilly side this morning, but temperatures will warm up into the 60s this afternoon, thinking mid to upper 60s. Clouds, they will be on the increase through the day, and rain will become likely as we head towards the late afternoon and evening. Now, rain will continue to be likely overnight tonight, lows back into the 50s and 40s across the region. For your Sunday, rain should exit, and sky should clear by early tomorrow morning. We'll call it partly cloudy by tomorrow afternoon. Breezy at times, winds upwards of 30 miles per hour, high temperatures in the upper 60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
105.9 FM, WMAL. Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, Jeff Wolf behind the console, Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. And there are so many things that we could cover, and it was really hard to kind of choose what are we going to focus on this morning. Probably the most important for everyone is the announcement yesterday from the Centers for Disease Control and the Food and Drug Administration. They have lifted the pause on the use of the Johnson & Johnson coronavirus vaccine. They say the label will now be updated to warn of blood clot risks. The vaccinations could resume as soon as today, according to the FDA. Now, there was a vote by the CDC's Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices. In that vote, they did recommend lifting the pause. In the vote, there was some dissension. There were 10 votes in favor, 4 votes opposed, and 1 abstention in the vote. There are 9 million J&J doses that are ready to go when that pause is lifted later today. They have agreed that using the one-shot vaccine that doesn't need to be stored in freezers was valuable and would be preferred by many people. The agency did a search. They found that 15 likely cases of a rare blood clotting condition with 3 deaths among people who got the vaccine. So J&J back in business when it comes to vaccinations, and that could be as soon as today. A lot of talk this week about President Biden's 10-year climate plan. And it's kind of like, gee, do we talk about the climate plan or do we talk about the fact that now he's proposing another $1.5 trillion in spending to go on top of the $2.3 trillion that we already have committed from him? So you got $3.8 trillion that you're just going to throw on top of the national debt or the climate plan? Well, I'm going to opt for the climate plan because you probably won't hear quite as much about this one. And you've heard all of the spin from the White House and the spin, obviously, from CNN and the mainstream media outlets and everyone glowing with praise. Well, the Wall Street Journal didn't exactly praise the plan. Here's what they had to say. The subhead in the Wall Street Journal opinion piece from the editorial board at the Wall Street Journal. This is not just one conservative writer. No, this is the entire editorial board at the WSJ. Subhead, Biden committing the U.S. to a far-fetched CO2 emissions goal without a vote of Congress. They go on. Was President Biden trying to impress China's Xi Jinping at Thursday's climate pep rally by committing to reduce U.S. greenhouse gas emissions by half below the 2005 levels and do it by 2030. His pledge tees up sweeping new government controls over the economy of the kind you might see in one of Mr. Xi's 5-year plans. Mr. Biden now has a 10-year version of central economic planning. Mr. Biden's virtual world summit was intended to coax China and other emerging countries to make more aggressive emissions reductions. The U.S. accounts for less than 15% of global CO2 emissions. Emissions in the U.S. and Europe have been falling since 2005. Rising emissions from China have swamped these declines. At the Paris Climate Summit in 2015, China committed only to begin reducing emissions in 2030, and it has continued to build coal plants and expand industrial production. And one more paragraph. This is a gem. The Biden goal will require the electric grid to be totally rebuilt in 10 years. According to the Natural Resources Defense Council, the U.S. will also have to double its share of carbon-free power to 80% from 40% today. Half of that is now provided by nuclear, and that all in having any hope of achieving Mr. Biden's pledge. So I'm not sure how you feel about that. All coal plants would have to be shut down, according to the WSJ editorial board. Natural gas plants would be phased into obsolescence. Wind and solar energy would have to increase 6 to 7-fold. So you feeling pretty good about that? Well, if that doesn't make you feel good, we'll have the climate czar, Mr. John Kerry. He'll make you feel better about it.
This is a plus. This is an economic bonanza. This is an opportunity to have the greatest beneficial economic transformation since the Industrial Revolution.
I'm sorry. An economic bonanza. The Industrial Revolution. Economic bonanza. Okay. Here's one more. This will make you feel better, from Climate Czar Kerry.
You said twice getting to net zero is going to be hard, really hard. And just remind everybody that will depend on whether or not we have some breakthrough technologies and breakthrough innovations, number one. But even if we get to net zero, we still have to get carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. So this is a bigger challenge than a lot of people have sort of really grabbed onto yet.
Now, I still have not seen in any of the coverage John Kerry's commitment to stop flying around on a private jet. Now, he's got the government jets back, so I'm sure he'll just be firing those up instead of the Heinz jet that he was flying around on in the off-season. Well, there you have it from John Kerry. There you have a description from the Wall Street editorial board, the Wall Street Journal. How about the former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo? Now, for contrast, remember, John Kerry was the guy that negotiated the Iran nuclear deal, which it looks like we're going to end up going back into, and he was Secretary of State. Mike Pompeo was Secretary of State. Here's how Mike Pompeo views the climate plan.
The decision for the United States to re-enter the Paris Climate Accord and then the announcement that the president made today is an enormous gift to the Chinese Communist Party and a real threat to the United States of America. It's a domestic threat. This will destroy tens and tens of thousands of jobs all across the United States. It's an international threat. When I was a Secretary of State, our capacity to deliver LNG and petroleum across the world gave us enormous global power. Our ability to reach them and help them turn the lights on in their countries and build out their economies gave us enormous diplomatic reach. And then I guess I'd say finally this, Brett, if you think that the Chinese Communist Party has any intention of delivering on any commitment it's made, you just haven't been watching. You haven't been watching Hong Kong. You haven't been watching Xinjiang. You haven't watched what they've done to Christians and Tibetans. You certainly haven't watched the commitments that they've made to the people on Taiwan. A distrust but verify was our model when dealing with the Chinese. For the Biden administration to think they achieved a victory today because China made some in-the-air, misty-eyed, good, wonderful-feeling summit commitment is just being played for a patsy.
Okay, so who would you rather have driving your bus, John Kerry or Mike Pompeo? While we're on this, just for a second, another contrast, and you've heard all of the criticism of the original Iran nuclear deal, and now, of course, negotiations underway for us to get back into an Iran nuclear deal, and here's how the former Secretary of State viewed that when he was talking with Brett Baer on Fox this week.
Well, to go back into the JCPOA would be an enormous mistake, and to lift these sanctions that we built up over the course of 4 years that had put real constraints on Iran's capacity would be a big mistake. Brett, you know these stories, right? These are terrorists, and they're now going to go declare that these are not terrorists. I don't see how one can in good faith do that. They never got a deal that approached anything that would attack the ballistic missile program that general referred to. We, on the other hand, denied them over $121 billion in foreign exchange reserves. They had to make difficult choices about their programs, and America was more secure because of it. We had great partners and friends, too. It wasn't America alone. The Arab states and Israel working alongside of us had Iran more isolated than at any time in history.
Okay. How you feeling about that 2020 election now? Huh? It is 6:19. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Virginia, in Sterling, a portion of Sterling Boulevard is closed between Shaw Road and Glen Drive due to a serious accident. And in the district in Southwest, a portion of 6th Street is closed in both directions between D Street and Maryland Avenue for water main repair work. And also in the district, you may still find some road work taking place on DC 295. And this is between Burroughs Avenue and Benning Road. You may find lane closures still in place in each direction. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A little bit on the chilly side this morning, but temperatures will warm up into the 60s this afternoon, thinking mid to upper 60s. Clouds, they will be on the increase through the day, and rain will become likely as we head towards the late afternoon and evening. Now, rain will continue to be likely overnight tonight, lows back into the 50s and 40s across the region. For your Sunday, rain should exit and sky should clear by early tomorrow morning. We'll call it partly cloudy by tomorrow afternoon. Breezy at times, winds upwards of 30 miles per hour, high temperatures in the upper 60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 39 degrees. It's 6:20 on the Saturday morning update on WMAO.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
Indeed, it is the Saturday morning update, and there will be a lot of talk about D.C. statehood in the weeks and months ahead. It cleared the House of Representatives, that legislation passing. Big question marks as to how far it's going to go in the Senate. We'll talk with John Gizzi about the prospects a little bit later on. But this is what Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, had to say about it.
Well, President Biden strongly supports D.C. statehood, and our administration will work with Congress to get it passed.
And, of course, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, in a celebratory mood this week.
We celebrated. It was the first time that the House of Representatives had recognized and voted and supported statehood for the District of Columbia. I proudly wear this 51 hat.
And that is Nancy Pelosi. And again, it's got a real hard road ahead in the Senate, but we'll go into a little more detail later on this morning with John Gizzi on the prospects of D.C. statehood. It's 6:23. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Coming up, I'm going to talk with Jennifer Harper of the Washington Times, and some interesting stories on the way this morning from Jennifer that we're going to get into, and I think you will find to be of interest, including one on former President Trump that I think you will find very interesting. He's had some changes going on, and also Mike Pence has made some recent comments about the border crisis, and Jennifer will get into that with us, and also an update on the activities of Governor Ron DeSantis. So that's all on the way from Jennifer Harper this morning. We're going to be talking with Jim Trusty, of course, our legal counsel, and we'll talk with Jim about the Derek Chauvin verdict, of course, and then what to expect in the trials of the other Minneapolis police officers who were on the scene that day when George Floyd died in Minneapolis at the hands of Derek Chauvin and the Minneapolis police. So we will have an update from Jim Trusty coming up. John Gizzi's on the way, as we mentioned. We'll talk about D.C. statehood with John. And also we'll talk about the late Walter Mondale and his connection to the current president, Joe Biden. That's on the way with John Gizzi. Also, two more Republicans in the Congress announcing that they will not run for re-election, and they are fairly strong names in the Republican Party, came out this week. We'll talk about those decisions from those Republican congressmen and what are the chances that the Republicans will keep those seats. That's coming up with John Gizzi. Cheryl Atkinson will also be coming up with us this morning, and always good to have Cheryl on. She's looking into some interesting stories, including one in which one person in Tennessee has come up with a way to make drug prices more affordable and drugs more available to seniors and those who do not have the wherewithal. That's coming up with Cheryl Atkinson this morning. Also, we will be talking with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and we're going to get Tony's read on the security aspects of the Biden climate plan. What does it mean for the military? And I think you will find that to be a very interesting conversation with Tony Schaefer coming up later on this morning. By the way, Tony Schaefer has a degree in environmental studies, so he is very knowledgeable on the topic. So we'll be talking with Tony later on this morning. And then we'll talk with KT McFarland. We'll get her read on the direction of the Biden administration this week and the talks over the climate plan that really, really will make some huge changes in the country. So we're going to talk about that with KT. So we've got a lot to cover all coming up on the Saturday morning update. Glad that you have joined us this morning. And One more, I got to get this in, and I have time to do it. Now, this is a classic, okay? Envision a Michigan lawmaker. This is Representative Jule Jones. He's a Democrat. Well, he was charged in Livingston County, Michigan, after driving his Chevy Tahoe into a ditch along Interstate 96. Now, it followed reports called into the police of erratic driving. Well, the lawmaker was arrested for drunken driving and resisting police. Well, he threatened to call Governor Gretchen Whitmer and told the state troopers it would not be good for them because he oversees their budget. That in the incident report. Police said he became so combative that they had to use a taser and pepper spray. During the struggle to handcuff him, he ignored verbal commands, allegedly. He warned the officers not to hit him while he was pinned on the ground, saying something like, "It would be very bad for you. I'll call Governor Whitmer right now." Said he would need their badge numbers when calling the governor, according to the report that was released on Wednesday. Jones refused a blood test, but they got a warrant. Turned out he had a blood alcohol content of 0.19%, more than twice the legal limit. Jones is 26, facing charges including resisting and obstructing officers, which is a felony, driving with a high blood alcohol content, reckless driving, and possessing a weapon while under the influence. Police said they found a loaded handgun in the cup holder of his vehicle. Okay, he is a Michigan lawmaker, and guess what his personalized license plate said? He went out and paid for a license plate that said, "Elected." Whew. 6:29, it's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. And in the news at this hour, U.S. health officials have lifted the 11-day pause on the Johnson & Johnson vaccinations following a recommendation by an expert panel. Advisors to the CDC and the FDA said on Friday the benefits of the single-dose COVID-19 shot outweigh a rare risk of blood clots. The CDC and FDA decided the J&J vaccine is critical to fight the pandemic and that the small clot risk could be handled with warnings to help younger women decide if they should use that shot or an alternative. European regulators earlier this week made a similar decision, deciding the clot risk was small enough to allow a rollout. A Minnesota court has set a June sentencing date for Derek Chauvin, who was convicted of murder and manslaughter in the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Online court records say that Chauvin will be sentenced on June 16th at 1:30 p.m. by Judge Peter Cahill. He is the same Hennepin County judge who oversaw the trial. Authorities say seven North Carolina deputies have been placed on leave in the aftermath of a black man being shot and killed by members of their department. They were serving a drug-related search and arrest warrant. The disclosure comes as calls increase for the release of deputy body cam footage. An Arizona judge's order halting an audit of 2020 election results from the state's largest county won't be enforced because he required the state Democratic Party to put up a $1 million bond. But Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Christopher Corey on Friday ordered that the Republican-led Senate and its private auditors must follow ballot secrecy. The audit includes a hand recount of 2.1 million ballots. The Senate hired a cybersecurity firm run by a man who has shared unfounded allegations of election fraud. A lawyer for Democrats says the bond was too risky. It's 6:33. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Michelle Murray is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Overall traffic is moving without delay on the Beltway throughout Maryland and Virginia. And so far in Virginia, 95 is running at speed from Aquia Harbor all the way in towards the Springfield area. Looks like the earlier road work on 66 between the Leesburg Pike and the Beltway has been picked up, and the ramp closures have also been cleared away. In the district, you will find that 6th Street is closed in both directions between D Street and Maryland Avenue for water main repairs. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A little bit on the chilly side this morning, but temperatures will warm up into the 60s this afternoon, thinking mid to upper 60s. Clouds, they will be on the increase through the day, and rain will become likely as we head towards the late afternoon and evening. Now, rain will continue to be likely overnight tonight, lows back into the 50s and 40s across the region. For your Sunday, rain should exit and skies should clear by early tomorrow morning. We'll call it partly cloudy by tomorrow afternoon. Breezy at times, winds upwards of 30 miles per hour, high temperatures in the upper 60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
39 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:34 on the Saturday morning update. The Saturday morning update continues. Jennifer Harper writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times, joins us every Saturday morning. And how are you?
I'm good. Hope you're well.
How is Mike Pence? We heard he had a little heart procedure this past week.
Yes, he did. And surprisingly, along with going through a situation like that, he also issued a very, very interesting statement on the border crisis. And I was quite surprised to see this, but it's kind of a reflection about perhaps Mike Pence's state of mind or the state of the border. I'm not really sure, but he did write a very telling essay for the DailySignal.com. And if you don't know what the DailySignal.com is, this is the news branch of the Heritage Foundation. It's very, very good. Always a good read. Very, very smart. And he wrote an op-ed for it, and I thought some of the wording was really significant. He said, President Joe Biden inherited the most secure southern border in American history. And yet, in just 3 short months, the Biden administration and Democrats in Congress have unleashed the worst border crisis in the history of our country. Again, this is coming from former Vice President Mike Pence. In the Daily Signal, he says the catastrophe now unfolding at our border is a direct result of progressive policies and pronouncements emanating from Democrats in Washington. But Democrats can end this disaster just as quickly as they caused it. All they have to do is reinstate common sense border enforcement and stop treating U.S. Immigration and Custom Enforcement and the Border Patrol as a concierge service for illegal aliens. And he goes on to say, immigration has been an existential issue for all nations at all times, but never more so for the United States. America is a welcoming nation to many who come in search of opportunity, but we also must be a nation of laws. Open borders combined with free health care, education, and welfare is a recipe for disaster. You can be for working class families or you can be for open borders, but you cannot be for both. Again, that's coming from Mike Pence. I thought was strong words there. And if you want to see the whole essay yourself, again, it's at DailySignal.com. And it is called Democrats Could End Border Crisis Quickly.
Good to hear from him. He's been kind of quiet since the election, and glad to hear he's speaking out. While we're on the border, you have a story about a day in the life of the Border Patrol, and I'll bet it's fascinating.
Well, it is fascinating. I constantly check the Border Patrol's press releases and so forth because I'm very curious about what they do during the day, and it's just always amazing. I mean, the stuff that you don't hear about the rescues that they do, about rescuing like an infant in the desert, things like that. I really try to keep up with that. But anyway, this was just something that came up this week to sort of illustrate what these folks are up against. This is coming from the McAllen, Texas Border Patrol agents. They're in Hidalgo County, Texas. They responded to several reports of large groups of non-citizens crossing the Rio Grande. The 3 groups encountered on Monday morning totaled 320 migrants. The group consisted of 229 family members, 86 unaccompanied children, and 5 single adults. The nationalities of these groups included Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Romania, Ecuador, Venezuela, and United Kingdom. Think about that. Anyway, it also noted that in the Rio Grande Valley, they encountered 44 groups of 100 or more people illegally entering the United States so far this year. And I have one more little tale to tell you, and this is not on the southern border. This is at John F. Kennedy International Airport. Again, this is to illustrate the multi-talented folks we have working for us. This is the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol's agricultural specialists, and this is what they seized on Thursday this week from a single passenger arriving on a flight from Ecuador, and this list is verbatim from the agents. They had 22 pounds of sapote, that's soft edible fruit, 4.5 pounds of cherries, 4.5 pounds of strawberries, 15.5 pounds of passion fruit, 4.5 pounds of tomatoes, fresh plant materials, don't know what that was, 13 pounds, 44 pounds of moloco, that is a tuberous root vegetable, 11 pounds of beef, 7 pounds of pork, 1 dozen fresh chicken eggs, and 1 fresh ostrich egg. So that's what they're up against, an ostrich egg. So think about that.
No drugs in there?
Not that they revealed, but the ostrich egg, I had to write about that one or something.
Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida is definitely on the radar screen of the major media outlets because they're out to get him, as we saw with that CBS 60 Minutes piece. He's not holding back anything. He's very vocal, and a lot of people are talking about him for 2024 to head the Republican ticket in the presidential race, of course. He's been speaking out about Democrats.
Yes, he has, and he had a very good interview this week with Fox News host Tucker Carlson, but not on Fox News. It was on Fox Nation. Check that out if you get a chance. That is the video on demand online arm of Fox News. Very powerful, very interesting content on there all the time. But anyway, Tucker Carlson asked Governor DeSantis a very, very interesting question. And he said, why did Democrats get angrier after they won? Because doesn't it sort of seem like they're angry all the time about one thing or another? And this is a reply from Ron DeSantis. He says, I think that they have a fraction of their base that is just perpetually angry. I think they're very caustic and nasty. I think unless they make us a complete socialist country, these people are never going to be happy. He also cited President Biden as an aggressive left-wing culture warrior. And he said the basic desire among the Democrats is to purge conservative thinking from that culture. He said anything short of complete domination of conservatism, making sure that people that have conservative views are shut out, anything short of that, then they're not going to be happy. And he went on to poke the media a little bit. He says, you know, the corporate media has always had a liberal bias. They're actively partisan, and not only that, it's all about crafting a narrative, regardless of the fact. If there's a fact that's inconvenient to the narrative, they'll smother the fact. They'll ignore the fact in order to be able to continue with the narrative. Again, this is coming from Ron DeSantis. And this conversation took place on Tucker Carlson Today. That's his new offering on Fox Nation. Again, a very interesting video on demand product that's 24 hours a day. So anyway, Ron DeSantis, he's definitely on the radar, just as you said.
Well, with all the efforts to knock Tucker Carlson off the air, interesting to see that he has another medium all lined up at Fox. While we're talking about strong words, there are strong words out of a Republican hopeful in Nevada.
Yes, and what I really like to do is I like to look around the country and see who's running for what. What Republicans are coming up and taking a stand, and they're ready to roll. And I like to see what they have to say. And this, again, is coming from Nevada. And this is for the 2022 midterm elections, and this is already crowding the radar. And this is according to Sam Peters. He is a conservative Republican. He's announced his intent to run for Nevada's 4th congressional district. He's a U.S. Air Force combat vet with a Bronze Star, and he's a small business owner based in Las Vegas. He's won all sorts of endorsements from Newt Gingrich, Ted Nugent, former Nevada Governor Robert List, Gaming Commissioner Joe W. Brown, Carson City Mayor Lori Bagwell, and Douglas County Sheriff Daniel Coverley. That's just a few of the folks on his list. I love seeing who the players are out there. But anyway, he's very open. He says, America is the greatest country on the face of the earth. I just love that. And he says he has a message for, quote, the entire radical liberal establishment in Washington, he says. And he says this in anticipation of arriving in the nation's capital in the future. He says, I'm coming, and I'm bringing a movement with me. Again, this is coming from Sam Peters. And if you're curious about him, you can find his campaign at Sam sampetersforcongress.com, and the four is a numerical four. So it's sampetersforcongress.com.
Earth Day this past week, very aggressive and progressive stance of the Biden administration on the environment on Earth Day, but it didn't please everybody.
No, it didn't. And I found this whole thing very interesting, Rick, because it was the Green Party that absolutely slammed President Biden on Earth Day. And they released a statement, a couple of statements, actually. Here's what they said. Greens to Biden. On climate, you are not the party of science. And this is the independent political third party. They did have a presidential candidate last time around. And they said that Mr. Biden's climate goals of cutting greenhouse gas emissions by 50% by 2030 falls woefully short of averting a climate catastrophe. Because anytime, you know, they can speak with more colorful language than a lot of people, they can say climate catastrophe and so forth. But anyway, they say there's no doubt that climate change is an existential crisis to humanity and the planet. Biden needs to formally declare a climate emergency and launch an all-out mobilization of national resources to give current and future generations a fighting chance for a future. This is coming from Harry Hawkins. He was actually the 2020 presidential nominee for the Green Party. And one more quote from them. They had a whole lot of them, but they say, Democrats love to lecture that half a loaf of bread is better than none, but the president is offering half of a parachute when we're about to be kicked out of the airplane. And if you're ever curious about the Green Party, and they have their own Green New Deal, if you want to see what that is, you can find them at gp.org.
So Donald Trump has made some phone calls to different media outlets since the election, but he gave his first on-camera interview this week. Who was he talking with? What did he say?
Well, he was talking with Sean Hannity. I believe it was on Tuesday night on Fox News. And indeed, as you mentioned, this is his first on-camera appearance since he left the White House. Significant. A lot of people were wondering, why now, or what's happening? Why did you wait so long? And the undercurrent, the understory on all of this is that President Trump, according to some news reports, has lost some weight, and he's currently in the, according to The Independent, Trump's post-presidency makeover. The former president is losing weight, cutting back on M&Ms, etc. And the most significant of these reports came from the Business Insider. They said the spray tan is gone, the suntan is on, the bleached highlights are out, and the gray is growing in. Some of former President Donald Trump's extra weight is off, too, thanks to better eating habits and a near-religious regimen of daily golf in the Florida sunshine. He has lost 15 pounds since he left the White House, said one Trump advisor who spoke with a former president about his health recently. And this started making people worried. People in the media, I mean, because it was an indication that perhaps the president is indeed serious about running again in 2024. And according to Vanity Fair, their headline was, "Good news for Donald Trump's waistline is bad news for America." So they got all clever about that. And if you missed the interview with Sean Hannity, it was, President Trump revisited the phrase, "Make America Great Again," and Republican strategies for 2022 and certain topics like immigration. But people have always wondered, Rick, about Mr. Trump's weight. And here's another quote for you. Donald Trump says he has lost 15 pounds on the campaign trail. This was according to People magazine on November 17th, 2015. And Mr. Trump's reply to that is, "I have lost weight because my events are so exciting." And that's what he told People. So we're all on the watch and thinking positive thoughts for former President Trump.
Tanned and rested. Jennifer Harper inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. As always, thank you very much. And you can follow her during the week on Twitter at Harper Bulletin.
Thanks a lot, Rick. Have a good weekend, everyone.
6:51, Saturday morning update. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center. Then we're back with Jim Trusty.
Overall traffic is moving without delay on the Beltway throughout Maryland and Virginia. And so far in Virginia, 95 is running at speed from Aquia Harbor all the way in towards the Springfield area. Looks like the earlier road work on 66 between the Leesburg Pike and the Beltway has been picked up, and the ramp closures have also been cleared away. In the district, you will find that 6th Street is closed in both directions between D Street and Maryland Avenue for water main repairs. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Temperatures will warm up into the 60s this afternoon, mid to upper 60s. Clouds increase through the day and rain likely as we head towards the late afternoon and evening. Now rain will be likely overnight tonight, lows into the 50s and 40s. Sunday, skies should clear by early tomorrow morning, partly cloudy by tomorrow afternoon, winds upwards of 30 miles per hour, high temperatures in the upper 60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liga at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
39 degrees on the Saturday morning update. It is the Saturday morning update. Glad that you've joined us, and it's always great to be joined by Jim Trusty. He is the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice, now a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
The verdict is in on the trial of Derek Chauvin in the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. And Jim, what stands out to you?
Well, I think in the biggest picture that the system works. You know, this was a difficult case in terms of the emotions around it and the public outcry and the political posturing. But really, it's mostly about a 9.5-minute tape and the behavior of that officer and ignoring people in the crowd, ignoring even fellow police officers, and contributing mightily to the death of Mr. Floyd. So, you know, I look at it as actually a pretty good example of how the criminal justice system is not on this deathbed that some of the politicians say it is. You had a judge that exercised a pretty firm hand over the trial, but I think in reasonable ways. You had attorneys on both sides that I think did a nice job. You know, it's easy for the television and radio attorneys to pot shot and talk about how they would have done it so much better, but these were very competent prosecutors, competent defense attorneys. They knew what they were doing. They knew the issues, and they framed it up for a multiracial jury that was apparently very cohesive. You know, no questions came from the jury. They sifted through some evidence and came back, a little over a day later. And that was a pretty good sign that they got it and that they knew what they were going to do and that they weren't having big ruptures between themselves about the evidence.
The defense attorney for Derek Chauvin was not a member of a dream team. Anything that he could have done differently, or was there just not much to work with when you're up against such a powerful video?
Yeah, I think it was a pretty undeniable central core fact, which is that Officer Chauvin really let his ego take control of the situation. He wasn't going to hear from other people that he had to get off of Mr. Floyd's neck. And that's what they call a bad fact on the defense side of things. There's only so much you can do. Now, I think it's true that in a lot of cases that I had as a prosecutor, if my case wasn't a great case, sometimes a small but fairly ineffective defense would actually help me. So I always thought it was sometimes better the defense, you know, they'd be better off just resting and not putting on any evidence. There's a little bit of an argument here on that concept, because they didn't obviously put Officer Chauvin on the stand, which I think would have been a horrible mistake. But they brought in this medical examiner to talk about the concept of carbon monoxide being the contributor or the cause of death. And I think that was a bridge too far. I don't think that was going to sell on the facts of this case. And it was easily knocked down in rebuttal by recalling one of the experts for the state. So that's about the only thing that I would quibble with. But again, their presentation in terms of opening, closing, their choice in terms of cross-examination points, it was solid. It was maybe not spectacular, maybe not a household name moment, but effective lawyering.
We saw the judge was critical of comments by politicians, including those of Maxine Waters. And then we saw the comments of President Biden and Kamala Harris several days later. What about the trials of the other officers that are upcoming? Will the defense question how you'll get an impartial jury?
Yeah, well, first of all, there's going to be a big, fat appellate brief on this issue for your Officer Chauvin's case. You know, I don't see a lot of real winner appellate issues for him, but this is one that's got some meat to it. You know, and Rick, you and I talked weeks back about the importance of jury selection and pretrial publicity when we talked about the Boston Marathon bomber case getting overturned. This is a perilous area. And so, you know, it's really not even just the Maxine Waters comments during the trial. It's the civil settlement by the city of $37 million while this case was gearing up. It's a interracial shooting between a police officer and someone else during this trial. And at all these junctures, the defense is building a record saying, Judge, this jury needs to be sequestered. They need to be questioned. And I think that's going to be the issue on appeal there, is whether or not the judge should have taken the jurors one by one and said, look, I want to make sure you haven't been affected or infected by any of these things that are happening out in the community, including politicians, other shootings, et cetera. He didn't do that, and they're going to claim that's an abuse of discretion. It'll be interesting to see how this judge deals with the co-defendant's cases. There's going to be the same types of pretrial publicity issues, much more difficult cases to prove, I might add. And so we'll see if he takes away anything from this first trial and changes his course for what's left.
Jim, a tragic situation in Columbus, Ohio this week, where police officers arrive on the scene. There is a female with a knife about to stab another female, and a lot of controversy created over that incident. Of course, it resulted in the death of Makia Bryant. A number of those criticizing the decision by the officer have been minimizing it in the sense that it was a knife fight, saying, well, you know, the officer shouldn't have used lethal force in the face of a knife fight. As the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the DOJ, tell us what maybe they're missing about knife fights.
Well, I mean, the first thing, I hear somebody saying a knife fight as if it's a kind of typical rite of passage in childhood. It's like playing kickball. And I wonder what planet I'm on before I get to any sort of legal analysis. I mean, how anyone can equate a knife fight to something that's typical or explainable in some sort of innocuous way. Look, I mean, knives are a serious weapon of choice. Lots of people get murdered by knives. It's not just guns that kill people. And I've certainly seen, you know, horrific stabbing cases over the years as a prosecutor. And to minimize a knife fight, to act like that's not a lethal moment, is just insane. It's just showing that people have lost track of the truth because they'd rather pursue a political narrative. And it's a narrative that's destructive to individual police officers, to the police officers in general in law enforcement. But it's also just destructive to the public discourse. I mean, this is crazy to talk about a knife fight like it's anything other than an incredibly dangerous situation. The headline should have been, police officer saves teen from stabbing. But today in our society, they flip it around like the officer definitely did something wrong.
And within 24 hours of that incident, Jim, a report in Cincinnati, Ohio, that a 13-year-old girl was charged with murder after police say she stabbed another 13-year-old to death during a fight. So two 13-year-olds, very similar situation to Columbus, this taking place in Cincinnati. And unfortunately, a 13-year-old died in that at the hands of another 13-year-old. A number of the pundits, including Joy Behar, who said, well, why don't they just fire a warning shot in the air? Well, I think we all know the answer to that. The bullet's going to come down somewhere. But how do you explain to people the whole notion of lethal force and that police just don't go around winging somebody in the arm or winging them in the leg?
My usual response to that type of pinheaded notion is to say people don't move like chess pieces. I mean, when you are a police officer in a scene where people are swinging at each other, yelling, screaming, threatening, pulling out knives and trying to stab folks, you don't have the luxury of being able to fire warning shots or announce that this would be a really bad idea, that you're going to have to fire your gun momentarily. I mean, it is a fog of war kind of moment that officers have to deal with every day. And again, I know there's times where the police officers get it wrong, either criminally or less than criminally. But the second guessing, the kind of institutional belief that there are so many nice alternatives to actually stopping somebody with a knife by shooting them is ridiculous and naive.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Follow him on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. 7 o'clock news is next, and then we will continue with John Gizzi, Cheryl Atkison, also Tony Schaefer, and Katie McFarland on the way.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.